This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. A little later in our program, we'll be talking about the recent NFL protests, their history, and what's coming next. We'll be joined by Louisiana State Representative Kenny Havard, as well as best-selling author Dinesh D'Souza, so stay tuned throughout today's program. But first, the latest attempt to repeal and replace Obamacare has come in the form of legislation called the Graham-Cassidy Bill. And joining Tony in our first segment today is one of the co-authors of that bill, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. Here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you very, very much.
Well, let me just start with probably the most obvious question. Can the Senate beat the clock and repeal Obamacare?
We're going to try as hard to repeal it as they did to pass it. So, yes, I think we can. We got a lot of momentum. Can I tell you very briefly what we're trying to accomplish here?
Go right ahead. That was my next question.
Okay. Federalism versus socialism, you decide what you want. Under Obamacare, it is not working. My state, South Carolina, is down to one provider. In 2014, we had five insurance companies on the state exchange. We're down to one with a 31% increase as of Friday of last week, 13% increase in premiums nationwide. 45% of the counties in this country are down to one provider. 45 counties have no competition. So Obamacare is failing miserably. I intend to do something about it. So here's what we do. We repeal the employer mandate, the individual mandate at the federal level. If you want to reimpose them at the state level, you can. If you want to go to single-payer health care in California or Oregon, you can. You just can't drag South Carolina with you. We take the rest of the funding for Obamacare that would have went to federal bureaucrats, insurance companies, and we block grant it back to the states over a 10-year period to achieve parity in spending by 2030. We give states flexibility, control over the money. You have more voice about how your health care will be administered because the people in charge of it you can vote for. Under Obamacare, some bureaucrat who could really doesn't care much about you. That's the idea. I think it's a very good idea. It's called federalism. It worked with welfare reform, Tony. It will work with health care.
Well, Senator Graham, so I assume with the elimination of the mandates that the penalties go with that.
Yes. So it's $450 billion in savings. We also reform Medicaid. Medicaid is going to cost more than the military budget by 2027. That's health care for the working poor. I want to help the working poor, but I'm tired of people running to emergency room and getting, you know, when they have a headache, you know, they need to be in a health care home. We need to do better by them. But we got to slow the growth of Medicaid. In year eight right. of the block grant, Medicaid has an inflation rate that is more sustainable, and we get more flexibility to get better outcomes. So we replace Washington-centric health care under Obamacare with state-controlled health care. You can't spend it on roads or bridges or hospitals or, football stadiums. You got to spend it on health care. But one size does not fit all.
Well, I agree with that in principle. I want to get into the details of the bill, and then I want to look out long term because
sure.
I've had some experience at the state level of some of these government programs when the feds give money to the state officials.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always work out like we had planned. So I'll get to that in a moment. But
sure.
first, some important aspects of this bill that I think our listeners want to know about is that in some ways this is better than previous versions of repeal because the way this money is block granted to the states, as I understand it, as I've read the measures, is that the Hyde-type language is applied to this so that no federal tax dollars can be used to fund abortions, elective abortions.
Under Obamacare, you don't have such restrictions. We're going to take $1.2 trillion that we would have spent on Obamacare, and we're going to block grant it in a fashion that I think is fair. Under Obamacare, between 2020 and 2026, Tony, four states get 35.4% of the money. They're 22% of the population, New York, California, Massachusetts, and Maryland. We're going to take that money, block grant it back to the states in a fair allocation. The Hyde protections follow every dollar, and that's not true of Obamacare. So I think it is a revolutionary idea in terms of health care, getting the money closer to the patient. in the hands of people the patient can vote for that will be listened to. We did this with welfare reform in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It worked. And this is the end of single-payer health care. I hope you understand. If we fail, then it's just a matter of time until you have Bernie Care. Obamacare is not good enough for the liberals. They want to go to Bernie Care, which is socialized, 100% government-owned health care.
Which they wanted from the very beginning, and this is just kind of a stop along
this
the
ends
way.
It. Yes. It's a placeholder for Bernie Care. Obamacare is a placeholder.
Right.
Graham Cassidy Heller Johnson is a block grant that takes the money and power out of Washington, and that's the end to the march of single-payer health care.
Yeah, and in fact, this concept of the block grants is something we proposed and worked for in the House when they were working on their version, but they said they couldn't get it done. So I'm actually glad to see that in the Senate, you've actually done something the House couldn't do. There's another aspect of this, and that is with the issue of funding for organizations that are involved in abortion, such as Planned Parenthood. That's long been an issue that's been talked about in reconciliation.
Right.
That will remain.
That stays. That stays. The same language in the House bill stays in the Senate bill. Let me just say about my Republican colleagues. If we're not for this, what are we for? Now, we know where the Democrats are going. To their credit, they have a belief in their ideas. They're willing to fight for them. We passed Obamacare on Christmas Eve. They use reconciliation. There's nothing they won't do to get their way.
Right.
We need to be as determined to repeal it as they were to replace it. We need
I agree
to get the money
you.
And power out of Washington. And I'm determined, my friend, this is the biggest thing I've ever done in my 20 years up here. And if we win this fight, we change the course of spending and health care. And if we lose this fight, God help your children and grandchildren.
Well, Senator Graham, if you do this, you'll do something that, as far as I know, has never been done. And that is to take a massive social program that has been thrust onto the American people and reverse it.
Right.
Now, I know there's some criticism that doesn't go far.
Sure.
I get all that.
Absolutely. But here's what I would say, Tony. We're going in the wrong direction. This puts us on a new path. Reconciliation is a restriction on how much flexibility
right.
we can give.
I
That's just the way the Senate works. The Democrats have been in charge of the Senate five times more than we have since World War II. So we're using a process they used. We turn around this ship. We begin to sail in the right direction. And over time, this idea will get better because I think Democratic governors are going to understand that they have more control over health care mm-hmm. under this model and maybe can get better outcomes.
Well, look, I fully support it. I think you're absolutely right. If it's not done, it leads to a single-payer government-controlled system with no protections. I will say this, and I'm going to get to the fiscal side of it here in just a moment.
Sure.
But from a social perspective, from a life perspective, I believe this measure is solid. It defunds Planned Parenthood, something that has never happened before.
Just like the House did.
Exactly. And so I think it's a good bill, and I think anyone who wants to claim the title of being pro-life would in the United States Senate would have a lot of explaining to do if they don't support this bill. That's just my view, but that's
well,
the way
you know,
I
would say that you know, we do what the House did with defunding Planned Parenthood for a year because that's all we can do under reconciliation. I hope you understand.
You did more. You do more than the House did by block granting this money.
The
with
hide protection.
Language.
So, you know, every dollar of Obamacare is now block granted with hide protections.
And that becomes statutory language.
Yeah, that becomes. I mean, I cannot tell you how big a change that is.
Yeah.
But I can just say this about health care: if it were working, I wouldn't be on this phone. If Obamacare delivered the way they said it,
well, we'd be talking about North Korea.
We'd be talking about North Korea, but yeah. It is getting worse. The worst is yet to come with Obamacare. But to me, we Republicans, we finally got something to be for.
Yeah. Okay. Let's look down the road here. 10 years.
Okay.
How is this going to work if the states are irresponsible in the way they allocate their
Good
monies?
Question.
Can they come back to the federal government? Is the federal government going to be bailing out the states who, like California, that has proven they cannot be responsible? What's going to happen then?
Okay, I can tell you if welfare is any indication, they claimed in 96 if we block granted money to deal with welfare to the states, people would die and it wouldn't work and, you know, they'd come back and ask for more money. We haven't increased the block grant at all because it actually worked. So here's what I would say. I would say that the ability to ask for more money is going to be a hard sell once other states prove they can use the money. You know who's the biggest winner under Obamacare? Insurance companies. My biggest critics right. are the Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance companies. They get hundreds of billions of dollars of direct payment through Obamacare. We take that money and give it to state government. I'm 100% confident that the Scott Walkers of the world, the Doug Ducey's of the world, the Republican governors of the world, and some Democrats are going to show us how to take money and get better outcomes. The idea that the federal government would in the future invest in something that's failed, I think, is virtually zero. But in a democracy, you never let your guard down. Getting the money and power out of Washington is step one. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Keeping the money and power out of Washington is a continuous fight. The Democrats, as long as I'm around, liberal Democrats, will be trying to undo what I've created. And we have to stay vigilant. And 10 years from now, we're going to have to make sure that the gains we've achieved stay in place. So it's a fight. You know, it's like going on a trip with your kids. They ask you, when do we get there? In democracy, it's the journey itself. If we can pull this off, and pray that we can, we're taking a different journey as an American public, as American people. We're rejecting socialism, and we believe that people closer to the patient are more caring than some bureaucrat. And I was in Greenville, South Carolina, Tony. I asked the people, do you know your state house member? Almost everybody raised their hand. Do you know the governor? Everybody raised their hand. Do you know the person in charge of Obamacare in South Carolina? Nobody raised their hand. I am telling you, having money and power closer to the people is going to deliver better results.
Without question. I mean, government closest to the people is always the most responsive and responsible. Senator, we're out of time, but one final question. What should people do that want to see this happen?
Get on the phone and call your member of the Senate. Call the Congress. Call the Senate and say, don't stop fighting. I'm never going to quit because there's too much at stake here. I'm going to keep fighting and keep fighting like they did.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Senator, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you. God bless.
Well, because of some defections within the Republican Party, the vote on the Graham-Cassidy bill did not take place. And now there is an effort underway to include both tax reform and the repeal of Obamacare within the 2018 Budget Reconciliation Act. So stay tuned to Washington Watch for the latest on that effort by Congress. You can also keep track of everything that Congress is doing when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back to talk about NFL players and coaches kneeling during the national anthem.
We need you in Washington, D.C. That's right. America is built on the courageous spirit of its people, and it is our duty to preserve the great nation by sustaining religious liberty, defending the unborn, and protecting the family. Take a stand for faith, family, and freedom at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Hear from invited and confirmed speakers like President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Loesch, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, Alveda King, Kevin Sorbo, Phil Robertson, and many more. This is the place to network and meet up with people and organizations that share a Christian worldview and to discuss important issues that will shape the future of our country. Join us at the Values Voters Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. We've gone from give me liberty or give me death to take care of me, please. What has happened to the American spirit? Our colleges were once bastions of free speech. Now they're bastions of speech codes. In a talk about his new book, Not a Daycare, Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, takes a hard look at what's happening around the country, including the demand for safe spaces and trigger warnings at universities like Yale, Brandeis, and Oberlin. Go to frc.org/speakers to watch.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Last weekend, many NFL players and coaches expressed their displeasure with something the president tweeted out by kneeling during the playing of the national anthem. And as I'm sure you know, the public was not happy with that decision. Louisiana State Representative Kenny Havard is here to highlight his proposal to prevent state tax dollars from going to the NFL's New Orleans Saints because of that team's protest. Here's Tony Perkins with Representative Kenny Havard.
Kenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate you having me.
All right. The Saints, as I understand, in the 2017 budget, they stand to get about $17 million in subsidies from the state government. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's, you know, kind of what you drew me into looking at this more closely is because, you know, I have a bunch of state workers in my district that I represent. They can't participate in any way in any political function, go to a party, any of those things, you know, because they're, you know, or state workers and receiving state tax dollars. So why in the world should we allow our state subsidized sporting event for people who ultimately ended up with that money being able to use it as a political platform?
I think that's certainly good reasoning. I would add, and I go back to my time in the state legislature when I was opposed from the very beginning, the idea of giving money, whether it be to the professional football team in New Orleans or the basketball team. I just don't think taxpayers should be forced to subsidize these guys making millions of dollars. I mean, it goes back to the old Roman idea of bread and circuses for the masses, and I just don't think it's something government ought to be doing. But I think this brings a fine point to it, that we're actually subsidizing something that is openly mocking and standing in defiance of the values that made this nation great.
Look, the people standing outside that dome, whether it be, you know, men and women in uniform, the military service, or the police officers that protect that dome to keep someone from going in, you know, setting off some dirty bomb or whatever the case may be, you know, they deserve better than that being thrown in their face. If they want to protest, go on Sunday morning, go on Saturday night, go Friday night, and go protest, and I certainly am support their the First Amendment and their right to do so,
right,
and their right to, you know, I'm for that. But let's fight, you know, if we can't all as a country get behind our national anthem, our flag, okay, then it's, I don't know if it's not too far gone, you know,
yeah,
to even try to save at this point.
Because I mean, what can we get behind?
What can we get behind? So, you know, if they want to protest, you know, and talk about an injustice, to me the real injustice is kids in you know, portions of New Orleans and even Baton Rouge and some other major cities can't even ride their bicycles on the street for fear of getting shot, caught in a crossfire between, you know, some, you know, drug gangs and these sorts of things. You know, that's what we should be protesting, and I'll go down there and protest with them. But that's the real thing, and we can make a difference there. But this, I hope that this at least starts the conversation, and we can meet.
Well, let me ask you about that conversation, Representative Havard. You introduced this idea today. Over the last 5 years, the Saints have received over $100 million from the state. What type of response have you gotten from your colleagues?
From my colleagues, I've gotten a lot of response. People saying, you know, good idea, great, I'm with you, I support you. Now I've gotten some, you know, from, you know, ones that I knew would be against it. So, but look, I've not voted for the budget. Probably, I've been there 6 years, and don't hold me to these numbers, but probably for the 6 years, I've not supported the budget. And one of the reasons is because of that. You know, because we are supporting the Saints,
right,
and here we are cutting kids on now waivers. We're cutting, you know, we can support the elderly and the kids on now waivers and our veterans if we quit subsidizing a billionaire. You know, so
right, and that's what this boils down to. The state has limited resources. It's not like the federal government that you can just keep the printing presses going. And the state has had been running deficits. You've had to cut a lot of programs to try to balance the budget, which is required every year. And so when you consider what's a priority, is it priority to subsidize billionaires and millionaires, or is it a priority to help the poor, the elderly, and those who can't help themselves?
And that's you know, it just happens that this is the year that they're protesting. And, you know, sitting there yesterday, you know, it struck a nerve with me, you know, when I watched it. I turned it off, and I won't be watching any more of the NFL games. And, you know, and I would ask people, look, it boils down to this. If you believe in what I believe in, you know, if you think I'm right, then don't watch it. If you think they're right, then continue to watch it.
Well, we will be watching your effort here. I applaud you. I think it's a great move, and I hope you're successful. And we'll get back with you to see how things line up as the state deals with this issue. Kenny Havert, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
You can find out more about Kenny Havert when you visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, best-selling author Dinesh D'Souza.
In a free country such as ours, it's easy to forget that slavery still exists. Human beings are being trafficked and sold for sex against their will. Human trafficking is a horrifying scourge that continues to haunt America, particularly through the proliferation of illegal online transactions between traffickers and buyers. As part of the FRC Speaker Series, Congresswoman Ann Wagner discusses congressional anti-human trafficking initiatives and how the conservative community can best be engaged in combating this horrific crime. Watch this discussion at frc.org/speakers.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Our next guest has spent a good chunk of his adult life exposing the left's efforts to transform America. And most recently, he wrote a book that shows how the left denies its own history and then blames Republicans for it. Joining Tony to talk about the big lie, as well as the National Football League protests, is Dinesh D'Souza.
Dinesh, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's great to be on the show.
You know, this thing to me appears to have really tapped into something. I mean, it shows the divide in this nation, but a lot of Americans are really tired of disrespecting America and those who have defended our country. And that's what the national anthem and the flag represents to so many people.
Yes, it does. And that raises the question, why is it so important for the left wing of the Democratic Party to do this? Why, in other words, why is attacking America something that they think is important to carry out? And I think the reason that they do this is it's a way of shaming conservatives. It's a way of shaming Republicans and conservatives into taking responsibility for the historical crimes of slavery and segregation and Jim Crow and the Ku Klux Klan. Now, The point I wanted to stress in the article is that what is, of course, so paradoxical and strange is that the Democratic Party is the party that actually promoted these historical evils. Mm-hmm. The Democratic Party was, in fact, the party of slavery and segregation. Every segregation law in the South was enacted by a Democratic legislature, signed by a Democratic governor. The Ku Klux Klan was a kind of domestic terrorist arm of the Democratic Party for 30 years. And so the Democrats are engaged in a kind of big lie, and by big lie I mean that they are taking the things that they did and blaming them on someone else. Now, in the case of the Confederate statues of a few weeks ago, they were blaming it on the South. And now in the case of the national anthem, they're blaming it on America. So they're blaming it on somebody else other than themselves, the people who actually did it. And that's why my latest book is called The Big Lie. The Big Lie refers to this practice of deception.
So what's their purpose? I mean, I know they're shaming Republicans. They want to silence the debate. Is this about them being able to really push their agenda forward by projecting onto conservatives their own past?
Well, they're trying to morally discredit the right. And specifically, they want to delegitimize Trump. I mean, look at all the abnormal behavior that's going on the left and in the Democratic Party right now. This has really begun since Election Day.
Right.
Trying to persuade electors to disavow their commitments, not attending the inauguration, disrupting the inauguration with violence, driving speakers off the campus. So all of this behavior would normally be completely inexcusable. But the left says the reason we're doing it is, look, we're fighting racism. We're fighting fascism. We are the anti-fascists. So these labels are not only insults. They are a way to legitimize
and justify conduct that would otherwise be morally and legally inexcusable.
So, in other words, what they are claiming the right is harboring in their hearts is what the left has actually done in their past.
Yes, and a very good example of this is if you look at these Antifa guys on campus, they claim to be fighting fascism. They claim to be fighting, you know, Hitler in the 1930s, and they compare Trump to Hitler. But if you look at them, they dress like the old, you know, black shirts of Mussolini's day or the brown shirts of Hitler's day. They carry weapons. They are all about intolerance and preventing speakers they don't like from having a point of view. So these are fascist tactics being carried out, oddly enough, in the name of fighting fascism.
So what is the proper response from conservatives, given the hostility, the obsession we see that the left has with Trump and stopping him?
Well, I keep hearing, you know, Republicans are generally very bad. I mean, they have generally no idea how to fight the culture war. And they tend to say things like, oh, this is such a distraction. Let's talk about the real issues. Let's try to convince these Antifa people that they shouldn't be uncivil. Civility is the way to go. Now, none of this really works, because the reason that the Antifa guys do the stuff they're doing is because it does work. It successfully does keep speakers off the campus. Right. So Trump has the right approach, and that is to call them out on it, to be tough, to enforce the law.
Dinesh, I agree with you. I actually think he's doing the right thing. He's the type of leader we need. I don't agree with everything he says, but I agree we need a leader like that that will stand up to the left. And Dinesh, thanks so much for joining us. I'll encourage people to check out that article at foxnews.com.
If you want to find out more about Dinesh D'Souza and his book, The Big Lie, just head on over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to tonyperkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.